Welcome to Transformation Nation with your hosts, Jason Krantz and Jordan Morrow. Whether in your personal life, family, career, or more, each of us has the power to transform. Our episodes are designed to help empower everyone to transform into the person that they want to be. Jump into this episode to learn how you can become who you want to become. Hey, everybody. How you doing? Jason Krantz here with my great friend, Jordan Morrow. Jordan, how you doing today, buddy?
Oh, man. Sun is shining. Although it's gotten hot, we've been hitting and tipping scales around 95, 100 degrees. But how can you complain on a sunny day? The sun's wonderful.
I'll tell you what, a little bit jealous of you because we got rain right here right now. But you know what? You're going to brighten up my day, my friend. And you know what? I think you had a question for me.
I've always got questions for you. I'm not sure that's the right thing to say, but we're going with it. I think for our listeners, right, we've been really heavy focused on data and analytics the last little bit. We talked about data literacy. We had two episodes, what it is, why it matters, what to do about it. We talked about data and analytical strategy, what it is, why it matters, what to do about it. One key element, though, that I think our listeners need to grab a hold of is what about obstacles and pain points? What about the things that stand in the way of them being successful here? And because I think that gets lost on people's minds. It's like we get so excited. Let me bring an analogy into play. Ultramarathon running or marathons in general. Right? People are like, oh, man, that Chicago Marathon looks so good where you are, or New York or blah, blah, blah. Let's do this. And then they realize all the pain they have to go through to make it happen. Right? All the running, all the fitness, all the work. And that can deter people. And for me, the journey is the joy, right? So even with data analytics, there's so much that can come from it, but there's going to be pain and issues along the way. So I'm going to give you a softball right off the bat, make it widespread. What is, in your opinion, the number one pain point that you see when it comes to the implementation of data and analytics strategy?
Oh, boy, where do we start? How much time do we have?
This could be 20 episodes. We'll go with one, though.
All right. The number one thing that I have seen in doing this a number of times is the idea that it's a plug-and-play solution and that once you get this solution in play, things will magically work, right? Similar to the topics that we've talked about before. But I think your running analogy is perfect. It's the romanticism of the idea. Like, yes, we're going to do this and it's magically going to transform everything and we're going to find Nirvana and it's going to be that panacea to help us realize our strategic and growth goals, right? And then you start getting into it. You start peeling back that onion and you see that there's actually a lot of work that has to go into making this happen. And that work manifests itself on a couple of different fronts. And I'll start with kind of what I call the foundation. And actually, there's the way that I look at it, there's two foundations. There's the data foundation, which I think most of our listeners would probably agree with, is that if your data house isn't in order, it's extremely difficult to create analytics and solutions and models that can move the needle because you're putting out junk data, you know, garbage in, garbage out. The other part, which is much, much harder because it's more nebulous in nature, is the culture. Same thing we've talked about before, the culture of analytics and decision-making and how decisions are made. And it gets to something that we've talked about before where you can have the best analytics in the world, things that tell you exactly what to do, as we talked about in the last episode with pricing as an example. But the question becomes, what are you going to do differently? And that differently is really hard. It just gets down to human behavior in my mind and that we are naturally resistant to change. It's part of what makes us human, I believe. Now, I think for some people, it's easier. Those with a growth mentality, growth mindset, tend to maybe understand that, to your point, this is going to stink. I don't like this change, but in order for me to get to where I want to go is necessary, to use your running analogy. If I want to run the marathon, I need to do the long runs, even though they're terrible.
Yeah.
I think that is kind of the same analogy in that some people look at it and they're like, oh yeah, I want to run a half marathon. And then wait, I got to run how much per week? I got to do that for how many weeks? And then wait, I want my long runs are how long? And it's kind of jumping into it, you know, it's yeah. And holy cow, I don't know if I want to do that. So that's what I've seen, but what have you seen?
Yeah, you're spot on. I think that panacea comment is so spot on. Like, I think people want an easy button. I think they think when it comes to data and analytics, implementing, you buy the tool, you buy this, you buy that, you do this, you do that. The reality is there's no easy button. That's not how this works. It doesn't all of a sudden just come at you and you're there. I can press this. All of my solutions are there. I do think this is actually why we have one reason we probably have a data literacy skills gap in general is salespeople have been really good for a long time in selling tools and getting people to believe their tool will be that easy button. Mm-hmm. And that's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So to me, it boils down to one, the number one roadblock, the number one is culture. And I wish there was an easier answer than that. But culture deals with so many different things, so many different aspects that deal with one key element, and that is a human being, right? So human beings have different perspectives, different attitudes, different skills, different everything. And the moment you just march in there and say, we have a new data and analytical initiative, you're a part of it, this is yours, blah, 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 then they are going to run into massive headwinds. They're going to run into roadblocks because people just don't buy in like that. So this is why data literacy, the human element of all this, needs to be taken into account, needs to be in there. Mm-hmm. And this going back to my running analogy, this is why attitude and knowledge really plays a part towards success in pretty much anything, right? Not just data and analytics. Because if you have a good, sound knowledge base or understanding of why something matters, this is getting to Simon Sinek's The Why, which I'm sure we've talked about many times now. This is, why does this matter? So for example, if I've got a friend who, I can't tell you how many times I hear people say, Jason, I can't keep up with you on the mountains. I'll invite them. They'll be like, man, I would love to do that. They're like, let's do it. Mm-hmm. And their response is, man, I can't keep up with you. They miss the point. I'm not going to invite someone just so I can leave them in the dust. Yeah. I'm going to invite them to take them up the mountain. Yep. So get over that roadblock, people. Yep. And analytics. If I'm an organization, and for any executive who's listening to this, make this a part of your rallying cry. If you tell someone, I'm investing in data and analytical work, I'm going to carry you along with me.
Yeah.
I'm going to allow you to ask questions and go at your pace to overcome that roadblock. Does that resonate with you?
Oh, my. That actually, to me, is like the magic potion. That is what makes it work. Is like, listen, man, we're in this together. Like, we're here for you. And I know this sounds soft and fluffy. As you know me very well, I'm not really into the soft and fluffy. But this is one of those where it's like, it's real. Whether you want to admit it or not, that's the stuff. Because it lets people know that you care, that you're vested in their success, and that you want to see them succeed. But in order for that to happen, it's going to require two people to meet in the middle, right? You're trying to do it from the tech data literacy side, and you want to meet them halfway. And what you're saying is, listen, I'm here for you, but I need you to come and meet me in the middle. I can't come the whole way. It's not possible. And then by doing that, you're providing that support mechanism to get them out there to make that first step, and then they realize it's possible. And then that starts to build inertia, right? And it's very, very, very powerful. And to your point, these topics, I believe, transcend. It's like, you know, as a parent, you look at this and it's teaching your kid to walk as an example. It's like, you're there for them. But eventually they have to go out and try it on their own. And then they realize, holy cow, you start to get the hang of it. And after a while, they're motoring around on their own, but it's that support mechanism and knowing that you're there for them if you need it. It's so, so important, right?
Absolutely. So we're talking right now about the pain points of implementing a data and analytical strategy. But let's change this pain point a little bit for us and go into another question. And that is, what pain points do you see in building or even starting a data and analytical strategy?
Yeah, this is probably going to sound a little crazy from what we regularly talk about, but I look at it as understanding and trust. Those are kind of the two things that I break it down to. And I say understanding because at least from my experience, whenever I'm going in, these are new capabilities, as we've talked about before. So it's a lot of new. And that understanding comes from both sides. It's one, me as the strategy and analytics leader, understanding what is the business trying to do? What are the objectives? How can we help, right? In my mind, that's what you have to start with. Because if you're, like we've talked about, if you start with tools, technology, solutions, look at my flux capacitor, it's the wrong approach. So starting with the business, right? And this is why we talked about two episodes ago, you know, we talked about being anchored in the business. It's hard to have those conversations if you aren't there with them on a daily basis, because that gets to the trust, right? Trust leads to sharing. Sharing leads to understanding. Understanding leads to better solutions and clarity on how these types of projects can help a business do better or understand more. So the understanding and making it known that one of the areas that I found a lot of success in, this is where I hammer on the social skills and leaders a lot, analytics leaders, because if you're able to communicate to somebody that you're trying to understand because you want to help them, they're going to reciprocate, or at least most of them are going to reciprocate. Even though you might not see eye to eye, they're going to at least put forth the effort to try to, again, meet you in the middle, right? And when you're doing that, when you're both trying to find that common ground and ways to help each other, that develops trust. And when you develop that trust, guess what? People listen to you. You have influence. Yep. They're going to take your recommendations. And these are the things, this is in my mind where the power of a great leader, any leader, doesn't matter what you're doing, any leader is the ability to get the trust of their people and the people that they work with. They might not fully agree, but it's like I mentioned before, one of the guys I most enjoyed working with in my life and I learned a ton from, we argued a ton. We argued quite a bit, but we argued from a position of understanding, trust, and we both knew we were trying to find the best possible solution to a problem. And that involved a lot of passionate arguing. But it's like we weren't taking it personally. It was more like we were having this back and forth. The reason why I say that is because that's the type of, in my mind, productive conversation that, you know, you fight it out in the locker room. So you go to the field as a unified front. But those things, if you get that right, getting the rest of the stuff in order, it falls in place much easier. If you lead with the tools and tech and you don't have that part in gear or in order, you might never effectively weaponize those capabilities to drive strategy. You know what I mean? So what, out of my monologuing there, what's your take on that? Like, have you seen that? Do you have a different?
No, you're spot on, man. I mean, I think people lose sight. They always have this, what's the tool? What's the technology? What's the sourcing? What's this? What's that? Don't get me wrong. All good things. But to even start, before you can implement it, to start a data and analytical strategy, there's a few things that you need to make sure is in place. One, use the one key word, trust. Does the workforce, first off, trust whoever the organization is putting in charge to run anything with data? If they don't trust that person, here's a prime example, and I won't go into names or anything like that, but at my prior company, there was a senior vice president who flat out took data, manipulated it to make it look different and better in a meeting. This is an SVP. My VP raised his hand, called her on it. And that the trust was gone for her. Like my boss, there's no way we're going to trust that. And so if you put someone in charge that people don't believe in, there's a problem. Mm-hmm. The other thing you hit home on, and this is where I would say, you've got to start. First off, one, do you have the right people in place to lead a strategy? Do you have a chief data officer? Do you have a chief analytics officer? Well, who is owning the data at the company? Make sure you understand that. If you don't understand that, what in the world are you going to do? You need someone to lead this charge. Once you have that, you need to determine as an organization, what is it you are trying to accomplish with your data? What are you actually trying to do?
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know, quit throwing money at the table. Figure out, like, I don't, how many companies, right, man? I know you're in this, I'm in this. I went to one company, and here's what's interesting. This company has hundreds of thousands of employees. They had over 10 business intelligence tools on premise. They did an analysis and couldn't find one reason to get rid of any of them. Now, should they consolidate? Probably. Is it going to cost money? Yeah, but probably not as much as having that many different BI tools on-prem is going to cost in the long run. Mm-hmm. And you have one, and I definitely won't go into this, naming this organization, because it has a very prominent spot with the COVID-19 pandemic. But it's a U.S. agency, and I'll just kind of leave it at that. But I went and talked to them. And talking, they're telling me they have Power BI, they have Tableau, they have Qlik. And I said, can you tell us what your organization's data and analytical strategy is? Something along those lines. Mm-hmm. They couldn't. They just smiled. Yep. So what is it you are trying to accomplish? If you can figure that out, i.e. I go back to running all the time. It's what I'm comfortable with. Just deal, you know. But the ultra marathon, my goal is to finish a 100-mile race. That's my starting point. I know what I'm trying to accomplish. Now I can get to work to finding the right tools, i.e. what clothes, what shoes, what nutrition plans do I need? I can get into knowledge base. What's the terrain like? What's the fitness regime? All of that because I knew the end point. If all of a sudden, I mean, you're a big workout guy too. Answer me this. If you do not have set targets or things you want to do, how good does a workout go?
Doesn't work out well at all. You got to have those. You got to have those goals.
Exactly. So it's to me, I love trust, but for me, the starting point for these companies, one, of course, make sure you have the right people leading it. Mm-hmm. But two, what is it you are trying to accomplish? If you know that, you're good. If you don't know that, what's your problem? And so it's, let's figure this out. So let's now transition almost along that trust line of question or ideas. One big challenge that exists out there with data and analytics is either, let's kind of classify this as either the naysayers that don't want to be a part of it, mm-hmm. or those that are comfortable and don't want to change. How do you address this? How do you overcome that?
Yeah, you're saying how do we address the naysayers?
Yeah, exactly. How do we overcome those that don't want to even start in a data analytics journey?
So this one's a fun one because in my mind, and I say fun because it's a challenge. If you're a DNA leader, you're gonna come across this at the executive level for sure, but throughout the organization. So it would behoove you to have a playbook on how to address this. But what I like to do, it varies based on personality. Like I'm a big field guy. I want to be in front of our customer. I want to be talking to them. I want to understand what they're doing. That's just the way that I manage. I know that that's a little unique, but for me, it gives me as a leader insight to lead more effectively and coach my team on how we can help. Because I mean, the way I look at it, you're a service provider, right? You're helping other entities do their jobs better, right? Analytics by itself and data by itself in general is not directly driving revenue or saving costs or whatever per se, right? You're it's being used by individuals capable of making changes that lead to profitability enhancements or whatever. But my take is I like to first understand or get a sense of what are the objectives of that person in that group overall, right? Because by understanding that, then you have some context on what are the things that they care about, right? And this is an aggregate perspective on persuasion in general. If you don't know what somebody cares about or what's important to them, it's extremely difficult to persuade, right? So as we look at this, is that by understanding what their objectives are and or could be and what they care about, and asking them, you can get that conversation going. Now, what that does is by them saying it, you're hearing, they're saying in their own words what matters to them. And then what you can do is you can contextualize how the services that you bring to the table can help them do their job better, easier, more effectively, more efficiently, whatever it may be. Because then what you're doing is it's about them. It's not about you and what you do. It's about how what you do can help them do their jobs better. I found this to be a remarkably effective, it's an overly simplistic because it just involves asking questions, listening, and understanding what people are saying. But my Lord, is it effective, because you're giving people a chance to voice their concern. They're saying why they're resistant to an idea. And once they say it, the cards are on the table, and then you can take action to address those. And so that's kind of the first step. The second step is, and I think I talked about this a couple episodes ago, is I like to find the biggest naysayer in anything. Like my favorite example is anytime you do a sales analytics or some kind of sales ops project or something, there's always one person who's like, I don't need this crap. You know, I've done it my whole life and I've been successful and I don't need this. And, you know, it's finding that person, acknowledging, being like, you know what, you're real good at this, but here's the thing. What if we can help you crush your sales quota? What if we can help you get better intelligence to give to your customers? So now you're not competing on price. You got a value prop that you're bringing to the table, because now what we're saying is it's not about data. It's how that data and information can be used to create value for his customer or her customer. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so by doing that, then what we're saying is we're taking an empathetic lens and we're understanding what they care about. We're contextualizing what we do so it's framed within that context. And then we're trying our damnedest to convert them. And really that comes through white glove treatment. It's really like literally whatever you need, or you're bringing ideas to them. You're like, hey, I had this. I thought you might be able to use this for, you know, a pricing discussion, or here's some market intelligence we got, or whatever it could be. But by being proactive in the management of that, I'm telling you this, all you need to do is convert one, because generally speaking, those people are extremely vocal about their resistance and how they don't need this. Now you look at the halo effect that goes with this and what their peers see. They're like, hold on, wait a minute. That guy we know is against this thing wholeheartedly. And if you're able to convert them and the other people in the organization see that, they're gonna naturally think, what am I missing? What are they doing? I'm curious about that. And then what happens is not you talking about how great you are, your services, or your offering, or your analytics, or data, or whatever. It's your customer talking about it, right? Your customer, and that could be internal or external, but in this situation, it's internal. When your customer is talking about how great you are on your behalf, that's 100x more powerful than you saying it. You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't know. How do you handle the naysayers?
Oh man, you're hitting it spot on. I think people historically, right? How many people like getting an email that says you have mandatory training? Right. What an easier way to make the naysayer more of a naysayer. So if you're trying to implement data and analytics and you're like, oh, dude, we've got mandatory training coming up on data literacy. Man, my data literacy initiative is going to fail. It's just not going to go on. So I love what you're saying. One, I love getting naysayers on board. In one way, you can get them on board by not even letting them know they're a part of a data project.
Yeah.
Bring them in and say, I've got a project I'm working on that requires your expertise. Mm. Because guess what? The naysayers have expertise, 100%. They do in something that you might need. Bring that to the table. Help them feel involved. Help them feel important without saying, I need you to get working on data. The reality is with anybody, whether they're a naysayer or not a naysayer, whether they don't want to change, whether they're just stuck in their ways, if they don't know why something needs to happen, it's not going to be successful. So for me, that focus on the why really, what's the word I'm looking for? Really just enhances the ability for anyone in data and analytics to drive home better solutions. End of story. So for me, focus on the why, and in some ways get those naysayers involved. If you could do those things, imagine this is what I've taught companies before. If you could turn the most ardent naysayer, the one who didn't want to use data more than anybody, into an avid believer, think about what you have on your hands.
Totally.
You could have this massive advocate that will go out of their way to help data and analytics work and be successful. But if we miss that boat, if we miss that mark, if we try and force it, if we try and give them more information, more tools, they'll be pushed further and further away. Here's an example. Click and Accenture teamed up to do this study where we showed people get sick and tired of hearing about data and analytics.
Yep.
Now, for us who work in data and analytics, I don't think we get sick and tired of it because we know why. But these naysayers and those that are sick and tired of it to the point that they even will avoid doing it, we run into this problem over and over and over again, and we're not going to see success. We can't just force it on them. We have to show it's almost a compassion to them and say, yeah, look, don't even worry about the data over here. Talk to me. And let's say you're working on marketing or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about this. You live in this. You understand this field. You understand that. What is it that we can do to improve this? That's going to go a lot further along than forcing it on them. I can guarantee that. So this piggybacks into another area, and that is one major obstacle is people who want to go off gut feel. What can we do about that? Is gut feel, let me ask you this, is gut feel to be replaced or enhanced? What do you think?
Oh, man, I'd say there's no question. It's got to be augmented with data and analytics, strategy, all these things, because the fact is it's not going anywhere. If you're trying to remove it, good luck, because you're going to fail. It's just human nature. You're taking away that instinct. And I would argue there's actually a tremendous amount of value in that gut feel, right? You know, kind of getting back to your point about the conversation of kind of, I guess, positioning the stuff correctly. I just want to revisit that, and I'll blend it into this answer here. But I look at our job as, you know, strategy and analytics leaders as more of a marketing exercise than anything else, because to your point, it's about positioning. It's about framing it as not this thing that's nebulous and thing is something that they don't know about. It's about how it's a tool that can be used to help them do their job better, to kind of the point of gut feel. They might look at analytics and saying, well, that's going to give me the concrete answer and I have no flexibility or freedom. And it's like, no, actually we need your gut feel to poke holes in the model, to look at the data. Yeah. And the thing is, what we need is, like, just as much as it needs you, I believe that you need it to either confirm what you're seeing, or perhaps it opens up a new perspective on something. You know what I mean? Because I'm telling you, I've seen it so many times where somebody has a feeling about something. They're like, here's a perfect analogy I used to explain the situation. So my last job, we were in the heating and cooling business. And I remember going into these executive meetings where people would be like, man, it's a hot summer. Like, you know, just it feels hot. And they had this natural instinct where it was like, it's hot. But they never had a way to quantify how hot it is. And that's where I pointed out to them, nothing revolutionary here, but I'm like, hey, there's this metric called heating degree days and cooling degree days that actually quantifies exactly how hot it is relative to other years. And so then what we did is we started to use that as a strategic tool to say, wow, this year is actually significantly hotter. How does that relate to demand, or how does it relate to other things? But to bring it back to gut feel, the gut feel said, man, it's really hot this summer. We should be selling a lot. And then we would augment that gut feel with the actual hard data on heating degree days cut across different regions. And then you can compare that to sales. And then that would essentially, you know, either confirm or challenge the notion or your gut feel of what you felt and saw on a daily basis. And so in my mind, those two work together. Analytics by itself, it can be extremely dangerous, I think, and not in a good way. You need the human in it. This is the same perspective I have on AI, as we talked about AI bias and all these other things, which this isn't an AI show, but, you know, I could talk for a long time about that. And that's where it's like, I'm of the belief that you need to have that gut feel in there, because it's the yin and the yang. They balance each other out, and they also challenge each other in good ways. I don't know. What are your thoughts, man?
Oh, I'm with you spot on. Like, I think far too often people feel data and analytics is here to replace the gut feel. It's not here to replace the gut feel. It's here to enhance, to go together. There's a scale. A picture or imagine this balancing scale. On the one side, you have data, technology, right? On the other side, you have the human element. You want to balance it. Sometimes it might be off a little. I get it. Sometimes that might be the necessity. Like, think of COVID and the shutdown. Maybe the data had to be very quick. You had to make very quick decisions. Or maybe it was the gut feel needed to be made there to make good decisions. But the overarching goal should be to take the gut feel, take the data, challenge things, work together, find solutions and insight that can lead to smart decisions. If you get that ball rolling on a regular basis, and this is the essence of data literacy, if you could get that rolling, you can see success. If you don't, if you rely on one versus the other too much, it could be a death sentence, especially as the world became digitized overnight. So to me, I think this is actually also a way to help the naysayers and those that are distrusting or anything like that mm-hmm. to understand we're not taking the job away from you. We're here to use data to help you, like you were saying. Mm-hmm. Doing that happens and helps a lot. And so I think that's where this is that whole culture. This is the holistic approach. This is everything we've been hitting on the last few episodes. This is why we need it. This is what matters. What do you think?
Yeah, I think to summarize what I heard there is you're talking about not making it about us, but making it about them and understanding their view of the world and understanding their challenges and what they're concerned about and framing how these things can help them perform better, right? I think that if we can do that as leaders, and I say this for any, I think this, again, transcends analytics and data. I think it's a general management philosophy of that. If you can create that clarity, you're going to have an army of people that are committed to the cause and are going to follow. And what that I think leads to is that they're going to be more receptive to kind of some of these things like we talked about, the advent of maybe data and analytics being integrated into the decision-making process, right? The digital maturation and all of this. And, one tangential question that just came up in my head, and I'm just asking this totally off the cuff. You brought up data literacy a couple times here, and I totally agree, as we've talked about before, that it's a major component, I think, of understanding the potential, right? So we've been talking about it from our perspective, but that, again, getting back to data literacy and that education, giving them the necessary context to clearly understand how this can help, right? You're an expert in this. What are some of the individual challenges that typically come up with data literacy training?
So, Dan, you're meaning just in general, how do you start it?
Yeah. How do you find that path to growth?
It's all start with curiosity. And the reason I say start with curiosity, which is what I tell a lot of people, is curiosity will get you to Google, right? Curiosity will get you to talk to people. Mm-hmm. Curiosity will get you to seek things out. Then, and I don't want to be on here pandering the click program, anything like that. Then it becomes this idea in your mind. Okay, same thing with fitness, same thing with career development, same thing with learning a new language. You start with curiosity, because what that will do from a data literacy, data and analytics, anything spectrum, it allows us as a person to start to ask questions, to start then to gather information, and then to get the ball rolling. Essentially, it's almost like we talked about with implementing data and analytic strategy, right? It's what is the outcome we want? Well, I want to be more data literate. What steps do I need to take to get there? Curiosity gets that ball rolling. And I'm such a big believer in data analytics, because curiosity challenges models. It's the human element. It brings it to the technology. It brings it to the soft skill, to the hard skill. That's what we can do.
Mm-hmm. I love it, man. I'm going to echo what you're saying, is that curiosity and actually learning through doing. That was actually, I don't know if you saw it. I think you saw it, but maybe like 2 months ago, I created a fictional data set for the data and analytics community. But it was also for people that are looking to develop their data skills. And we created this data set. It was really like real world data. I mean, it wasn't anybody's data, but we created it as if, hey, here's a real business challenge, right? It's not like the Titanic and where are people sitting and who survives? Like, okay, that's a great theoretical exercise. It's like, no, this is actually a real analysis that people might see in a real business situation where you're looking at profitability, sales trends, freight costs, things like that. But it really comes down to that curiosity is the impetus to go out and start doing. but really you build those skills through doing, right? Like you, unless you're practicing something, you're not going to get better at it. So that would be my recommendation is, you know, like if you've gotten this far in the podcast, I encourage you to go to my site. I'll put it in the show notes where you can go download that data set and just give it a shot because, you know, as Jordan talked about, the curiosity is the impetus, but doing is actually where you learn. Anything else you want to talk about today? Or?
No, I think I'm good, man. This is kind of the nuggets, right? When you talk about data literacy and then data and analytics strategy, we talk about the ins and outs, this and that. This right here, though, these are the ins and outs and the understanding of the little things. These are the pieces, the pain points, I think get looked over way too quickly and way too often. So I think this was the one. This was a very fun one. Always, it's fun, man.
It's always fun, man. Always a good conversation with you. But, man, hey, yep. Really enjoyed the conversation. Looking forward to our next episode, which we're going to be doing a summarization of everything that we've done in season one. And kind of outline what we've got planned for season two. But quick favor to ask of you, if you haven't already, can you give us a review on whatever podcast platform that you listen to? If you can go give us a review, we'd really, really, really appreciate it. It helps out in letting other people know about our podcast. And we would really appreciate it. If we've added any value for you or you've enjoyed this at all, it's the biggest thing that you can do for us. But Jordan, thanks again, my man. I really appreciate it. And make it a great day, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us today on another episode of Transformation Nation. Please take the time to connect with both of us. Reach out through our social channels and start taking those first steps towards not only transforming yourself, but empowering everyone to become who they want to be. Until next time, this is Jason and Jordan. Go dominate, my friends.